very pleased this evening to welcome Dr. Mark Vonnegut. Mark is a pediatrician, lives in Massachusetts and practices in Massachusetts. He is an author of a book that was released last year entitled Just Like Someone Without Mental Illness, Only More So, a memoir which actually is a follow-up to a memoir he did by the name of The Eden Express 30 years ago. I'll take a deep breath. Mark, thanks so much for joining us on the Roadhouse.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. And I mentioned this before, and I'm sure that this is probably one of the first things that you get when somebody meets you is, oh, by the way, are you related to the author Kurt Vonnegut? In fact, you are his son. But this, I got to tell you, I really, really enjoyed the book. It is a memoir, and it covers a lot of territory. The title, how did you come up with the title? Just Like Someone Without Mental Illness, Only More So.
Well, I was asked at a talk I gave for National Alliance of the Mentally Ill. They said, okay, well, you have pretty normal clothes on, and you go to work every day, so what's the difference between you and someone without mental illness? And I just said, I'm just like somebody without mental illness, only more so. And my wife told me I should remember that.
Now, 30 years ago, 1970, you wrote The Eden Express, which was a memoir and a story actually about your own experience with mental illness back then.
Correct.
What prompted a book 30 years later, another memoir?
Well, I felt so differently about it. When I was in my 20s, I was more of a fighter, and I had a huge chip on my shoulder, and I somehow thought that, I worked hard, and that's why I got to be, lucky enough to get a life and to get out of that rut. Whereas, looking back on it now, I just think, a lot has to do with luck and grace and things I had very little to do with.
You experienced three episodes back in the 70s.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word, and please correct the incorrect word if I'm using it, three breakdowns. And were hospitalized. Then you went 14 years until 1985, had another experience, and at least according to your book, since 1985 there have been none. Talk about what it is about mental illness that can, and I think back in the 70s you were diagnosed as schizophrenic. We would now talk about it as bipolar.
Right.
What is it about it? Is it only medication, or what gives you three in a row, then nothing for 14 years, then nothing after that?
I think the tendency to have psychotic breaks is inherited, and under the right stress, the right drugs, whatever, it can happen to anyone. I think the things that have allowed me to be well since then, among grace and luck, are I'm very lucky because lithium works well for me, and I also figured out it's a hard lesson that alcohol and drugs are definitely not my friend, and so sort of being strictly abstinent of those things has given me a much more solid framework to deal from.
Obviously, within a lot of people who do experience mental illness, mental break episodes, there is a lot of times drugs or alcohol involved.
I think a lot of the time, and certainly for me, I was trying very hard to be normal, and I thought, well, I'm not trying to have a good party. I'm just trying to vaguely get through, and it feels like especially the alcohol sort of calms you down.
Mm-hmm. And how difficult is it? I think, I think more and more of us, as time goes on, particularly as we get older, less and less use the word normal, or at least the meaning becomes clouded. And what's that like for a younger person, as you were back in the early 70s, who experiences these breaks and are just trying to be normal? What does that feel like?
Well, I had a sort of anger and resentment and resolve that I could, number one, put myself in a position where I could apply to medical school, and then I got lucky enough to get in, and then I was going to get through it. I don't have that drive anymore to, you know, prove that I'm just as good as anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a congenial thing to live with.
You grew up in a very famous family, but not necessarily, a family like a lot of families has lots of issues.
Yeah.
You suffered, you overused drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
Experienced mental illness. How much of that stuff contributes to the, or has to do with the other in a causal way, or is it just luck of the draw? I mean, a lot of people grew up in strange families that don't have mental illness.
Right. I mean, you were saying about the word normal.
Yeah.
I have my own practice, so I have to hire people and things like that. And I remember the sort of the sensation, oh, they're very normal. And then the next thought is, about 6 months from now, I'll know what's wrong with them.
Usually takes that long.
Well, it can if they're good.
Yeah, right. And I want to talk more about what's in the book than just your mental illness. But I'm also, when you experienced the ones early in the 70s and then the one 14 years later, is there a difference in how you looked at what your life was going to be like? In other words, when you're young, do you have this feeling, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to get past this? When it reoccurred 14 years later, do you have the feeling, oh my God, am I going to be going through this for the rest of my life? I mean, what were those kinds of feelings like?
I think that's universal. I think anybody who has a psychotic break does not think that they can survive it, because it's just so. And I also, as a doctor, I thought, I'll get kicked to the curb because I'd better get my act together within a few months, or I'll lose my license, and this will happen, or that will happen. It was sort of this, Jesus, I went to all this trouble to become a doctor. I practiced for 5 years, and I bomb out. It just didn't feel good.
Yeah. We're visiting with Dr. Mark Vonnegut, who is a pediatrician and the author of a book released last year, Just Like Someone Without Mental Illness, Only More So. You're a physician, you're a pediatrician, you've been at it for 5 years, and you, as you said, you had this psychotic break. How many people in a variety of professions, but certainly in, let's say, in the medical profession, are out there with mental illness but either don't know it or don't know what to do about it?
I think between 5 and 10% of the population has significant bipolar illness. And there, you know, for something that is a genetic illness to survive, it has to have an upside. And I think that we can work and concentrate and get an amazing amount done, and we can get by with less sleep or whatever. But I don't think that people with psychotic breaks are very, you know, it doesn't constitute a a health hazard or anything. It's just, there's a lot of the population, and a lot of part of the problem and why I wrote the book was people who can pass for normal and, you know, get dressed and go to work just sort of can easily pretend it never happened.
Sure. I was really interested. You went to Harvard University.
Yep.
Later became on the review committee. I think that's the right word as far as approving applicants to go to Harvard.
Yep. Committee.
And when you, I don't know if it was when you were getting out of medical school and you're told, I don't know if it was an instructor or somebody at Harvard that you wanted to be a pediatrician, he said, that's a waste of a good Harvard education.
Correct.
What do they expect when you come out of Harvard?
I think I was supposed to go save some small Latin American country, or possibly wipe out a couple of illnesses or something. It's an incredibly arrogant attitude. I'm very, very grateful to Harvard, but you know that attitude was not shared by everybody. But the idea that coming, into the world with a degree from Harvard Medical School gives you, you're supposed to create a volume of good. You know, I don't know how many tons of good it is you're supposed to produce, but
a body of work that is.
It's just silly.
Yeah, and what was that like for you then with that kind of attitude? And as you say, not everybody at Harvard, but certainly, and I think that's an attitude that goes beyond Harvard. I think that's a perception that maybe people have of it. So what it was like when you went on the review committee, and now you have to start looking at people coming in, and as you said in your book, if they're not tens, they don't get noticed.
That's right. It was a very interesting experience. I was astounded by the depth and breadth of accomplishment of these people who were all in their early 20s. They had worked in Nobel laboratories. They had done this. They were concert quality pianists and stuff like that. It was sort of a hollow feeling in a way, because I didn't think that being a doctor was good enough for these people. But I didn't know. It was sort of, if you know somebody who can play note perfect Beethoven sonatas and stuff, but still they're unhappy. I had imagined that if you had applicants that gifted and so strong, and that it would amount to more good somehow, but it doesn't.
Doesn't necessarily. And shouldn't there be a place, maybe not at Harvard, although I would think at Harvard, but shouldn't there be a place in medical school for somebody that's 8 3/4?
Exactly. I mean, the question I kept asking myself was, well, what happens to a normal good kid who works hard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, somebody like yourself, I would think. I mean, how does somebody like yourself get into medical school now?
Right. I was just plain lucky, but I do, have that, that feeling of if you have, you can't, it doesn't work somehow if you have these, brilliant people taking care of average people. I mean, we should all sort of be more the same.
You're still in practice as a pediatrician, and I know that you meant one of the other things that I really liked in the book is, and I don't remember, I think it was an instructor at medical school who said that they know that half of what they taught you was not the case, but it was up to you to find out which half, and I think you said it's well more than half.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit. That when you come out of medical school, at least in your opinion, you don't have what you need to start becoming a doctor.
Well, and I think what you gain pretty quickly if you're in a primary care practice is you catch on pretty quickly that the amount of good and stuff you can do is sort of limited. So you have to learn how to humbly sit with people, and sort of rather than coming in with that's gummy get you syndrome or whatever, and be the brilliant diagnostician. And it's a much more of a dialogue than bringing enlightenment to the masses.
And I think you also mentioned in your book that at one point in time, medicine seemed to just be medication, and maybe more medication.
Yeah.
Has it, and I have a feeling it has, but has it in general moved away from that to more what you're talking about?
It's still too much that. I mean, you still have the model of what the insurers want to pay for and what the pharmaceutical, it still is. Most of medicine is a 10 or 15 minute visit, which ends with a prescription.
Mm-hmm.
And there is I think a lack of appreciation for the shortcomings of that model. Like Mother Nature doesn't usually mess up in such a way that the pharmaceutical industry can fix it now.
So what is the alternative to that model?
Knowledge, I think. I think having people understand, like people say, you know, say, oh, it was just a wasted visit. They came and they learned that they had a virus. I said, no, it was a good visit. They come, they no longer worry that they have, you know, cancer or this or that. They have the knowledge that this is an illness which behaves in such a way and will stop in a few days.
And is it also perhaps knowledge that I need to take more responsibility for my own health?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I'm very careful when I'm dealing with a kid who's doing poorly in school, one, to point out that maybe school isn't their thing. You're almost not allowed to say that, but the kids and the parents all crack up when you say that maybe school isn't your thing. But also, I say, if you want to change what's going on here, and they say you can clean up your diet, make sure you sleep better, stay away from drugs and alcohol, stop swearing at your mother, clean up your room, and take the pill.
Yeah, right.
It's in a list of things that might help.
So much has been said, and for a number of years, about whether our, I don't suppose anybody argues that perhaps our system of healthcare is broken, just depends on which degree and how. But is there a way, you know, it appears anyway, that insurers, HMOs, insurance companies, and drug companies, pharmaceutical companies, the money that they spend and control has so much to do with the way our healthcare system operates. Is there a way to cure that? Is there a way to change that?
I think the system will break, and that people will going back to having actual clinicians be in charge of the content of care, and people will go back to going into offices and paying, you know, like $50 a visit or whatever, instead of the $200 visit, which is all full of fluff and boilerplate at present. And it'll be, you know, I think to get insurers out of the business would be fantastic. And that should happen in primary care, first of all, just where, you know, people pay, you know, and doctors set their own rate.
Uh-huh. And so there is no insurance or a single-payer type insurance?
A single payer would be my first choice.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think when a doctor looks at the way things work right now, rather than a primary care thing that is paid by insurance, he's much better off just saying, you know, I don't take insurance. You give me $50 and we're done.
Sure, sure. Let me shift gears for a minute. And again, I want to remind our listeners we're visiting with Dr. Mark Vonnegut, who is a pediatrician in Massachusetts and the author of a book, Just Like Someone Without Mental Illness, Only More So. Has society, and it seems to me that you can speak to this as perhaps nobody else can, but has society's view of mental illness changed sufficiently to where we don't think of it as the other?
I still think we think of it as the other, and I think when we're looking at homelessness, we're looking at untreated mental illness. When we're talking about the packed prisons, we're talking about an enormous population. There is untreated mental illness, and we want it to be other because we don't want that to be possible for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the truth is it can be possible for us and frequently is, and we just don't even know about it in ourselves or in others. So what is the model that works look like there?
There are some places like the Clubhouse movement or Fountain House in New York City, and I'm sure there are other places where they sort of employ and support the mentally ill, and they're not sitting there, you know, say, oh, well, there's a paranoid schizophrenic, there's a bipolar two, or whatever. They are just sort of like clients of the system, and I think that can work very, very well. Sort of peer, a lot of the treatment is sort of peer treatment or milieu, and the emphasis is getting people jobs getting people a role that they can fulfill.
Sounds like more care-filled and perhaps productive than prisons, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My last question or set of questions is and this is probably way over asked, and I apologize if it is, but what was it like growing up with a father like Kurt Vonnegut?
The blessing is, if he had been famous, as he was, you know, once I was in my 30s or whatever, complete pain in the ass. Because he really literally could turn it on and off. But the father I grew up with was not famous. He wasn't successful. He couldn't get a job teaching English at Cape Cod Community College. And he was, you know, a guy I could beat pretty easily at chess. And I worried about him a lot. And,
really?
You know, I've known a lot of people who, you know, who grew up with fame as part of the deal, and I think it's much, much better to have your father become famous once you're about 21 or 2.
At least when you're gone, immediately gone from the homestead.
Yeah, get out of the house, because he's going to be personal. He's going to buy new cars. It's ugly.
I'm sorry, now will be my last question, but... And because, again, you had a father your expression was you worried about him. Is all mental illness hereditary?
I believe an awful lot of it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're still at a state where we, at any given point, it's hard to tell who's schizophrenic, who's bipolar, or even if there are two separate illnesses.
Right.
And it may be that if you're just sick long enough and unwell long enough, you sort of become a dull schizophrenic, or if you don't know. I really don't know, but I do think a huge amount of it is genetic, and you could certainly study that in families, in schizophrenia and bipolar disease. They run in the same pattern.
Yeah, yeah. We have been visiting with Dr. Mark Vonnegut, who a pediatrician, the author of the book Just Like Someone Without Mental Illness, Only More So. He has joined us from his home in Massachusetts. Dr. Vonnegut, I want to thank you sincerely for being with us. I thoroughly enjoyed the book and enjoyed visiting with you.